Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now this listener tells me, Dave, that you're a
It is Monday, which means it's time for the Front Three Weekend Review with me, Adam Boltwood, Lawrence McKenna.
Hello, how you doing?
Decent. And Dave O'Brien.
Well, cheers, mate. Thanks a lot, buddy.
I'm just going to breeze straight past that. Guys, what a great weekend it was, especially for me. Just fantastic. First off, Lawrence, we went to have a little five-side kickabout, didn't we?
We loved it. Saturday. We had a great time.
It was great. Shout out to listeners Ryan and Brandon, who assembled a five-a-side team to take mine and Lawrence's team on. We were 5-0 down at one point. I did get nutmegged 10 times. But experience over youth, Lawrence. We came back. We hammered them, sort of, 10-9.
I'd say roughhousing over pretty feet one.
Yes, yeah. In many ways. And as if that wasn't enough, we go to the pub, get a quick drink, catch the end of the Manchester United game. I'm thinking, my luck's out, lads. Zlatan Ibrahimovic is stepping up for a penalty almost as soon as we walk in. But not only does he miss the penalty, but later I find out he might be banned for 3 games.
Everything came up Zlathouse.
Everything came up Zlathouse. I couldn't believe it. Now part of me thinks this is not a good thing. Zlatan's going to be banned for 3 games. He's going to come back fresh, raring to go, chomping at the bit to get amongst the goals once again. He's going to bag a hat-trick in his first game back, etc., etc.
Well, the rest of you thinks 3 games lost. How many more games does he have?
9 league games, I think he'll have left.
Thank God for the FA Cup, eh, Dave?
Thank God for the FA Cup. We will talk about Manchester United's disappointing draw with Bournemouth. Not disappointing for me. We'll also talk about Liverpool smashing Arsenal, I think it's fair to say. Tottenham beating Everton, Kane v Lukaku as that one was billed. We'll also be rounding up all the European action, as well as talking MLS with the one and only Chris Hennage, who's out there. He's in the United States right now. Our man on the ground there.
And we'll Did we send him all the way there just for that?
Yeah, of course, mate. You know, the budget on the Front Three is extraordinary. But there's only one place to start. Monday Night Football. A real thriller, Dave. Chelsea beating West Ham 2-1 at the London Stadium. 10 points clear now for Antonio Conte's side. The title race is over.
Nearly. I think Man City are showing a little bit good bit of form at the moment. Tottenham, pretty decent against Everton. But Chelsea, they do look very, very good, especially defensively. I thought Gary Cahill was absolutely fantastic this evening. Ripped his shirt halfway through the first half. That didn't deter him. Made so many key blocks, just very composed on the ball, and it was a good display. And it's sort of that solid foundation has been why Chelsea have done so well this season. Obviously, the solid foundation gives them space to counter-attack, and that's exactly what Chelsea did. Both of the goals were excellent. The first one was a brilliant move from back to front, Eden Hazard rounding it off. But Chelsea just kept on breaking on West Ham after that first goal. West Ham pushed on. They just broke. And it was, you know, Cesc Fabregas in midfield instead of Matic is an interesting one, and he played very well for me, Fabregas next to Kante. But I think it was just a good, organised defensive performance, and it was an Italian performance, to say the least, and the three centre-halves were brilliant.
Kept Andy Carroll quiet as well, those three centre-halves.
Yeah, I think you completely nullified him. it's that thing that Chelsea actually dropped to a back five, and that they do look more of a 5-4-1 than a 3-4-3, because they do spend a lot of time in the defensive shape. And yeah, Carroll was a bit anonymous. Snodgrass had moments. Fagouli had a few moments, had another pretty reckless tackle that he should have got booked for. Seems to be something that's part of his game, you know, going in and cleaning people out. Seems a bit odd for a flying winger. But yeah, Chelsea were just better, much better than West Ham. And unfortunately, West Ham suffering another defeat at the Olympic Stadium.
Chelsea 10 points clear then. But overall this weekend, an interesting weekend for the top six. The big game, of course, Liverpool winning 3-1 at Anfield against Arsenal. Lawrence, the game overshadowed by a certain Alexis Sanchez. But before we get into all that on the pitch, Lawrence, talk to me about this performance from the Reds.
Well, it was impressive. I mean, again, it sort of goes down to the press, sort of starting things for Liverpool. Again, comes down very much so to the fact that Arsenal didn't try and exploit Liverpool's weaknesses at all and didn't play to their strengths, which was very weird. And it's been the case in a couple of Liverpool-Arsenal games very recently. So essentially, that just allowed Mane to run at the back line. It also allowed Lallana and at times other people who were straying into the area. Firmino, I actually thought, did an exceptional job of exploiting the space and starting the press in the same way that Klopp thought Lallana did. Firmino and Lallana are two guys who are very good at starting the press for Liverpool. I think that's why Klopp's so appreciative of them. I also think that Arsenal didn't seem to have any sort of idea of how to get around Liverpool's tactics. Didn't seem like there was anyone out there that was kind of thinking or being very proactive. I understand that when Sanchez came on, it sort of played around it, and that was somewhat down to Sanchez, somewhat down to Wenger telling him where to go, what to do. But I also think Klopp managed that reasonably well. You know, he managed to change Liverpool's tactics to counter bringing on Sanchez. And ultimately, it played out quite well, because when Liverpool were on the ropes, 2-1 up, they went back to 3-1. And obviously, the centre-back partnership for Liverpool also made them a lot more convincing. Klavan and Matip is probably the best that Liverpool could field right now.
Maybe Saka, if he was in there. Let me ask you this. Once again, we see Liverpool performing against a top team at home. Having previously been beaten by, at the time, a team in the bottom three or four in the table. What is the cause of that? I saw a friend of the show, Nick Morales, on Twitter, the super sub himself, saying that he was getting frustrated. He was saying it's 1,000,000%, I believe he said, nothing to do with mentality, nothing to do with the players approaching this game with the wrong mindset. It's all about tactical issues on the field. Is it not somewhere in the middle, maybe, the truth?
Well, obviously, I do think... But the thing is with Klopp, he is a psychological manager. He's a manager who banks on the fact that his players will psychologically follow him. And therefore, they will play in a very specific way, which, when I say a very specific way, they enact the press in a very specific way. They move in a very specific way, a way which is very compacted to becoming suddenly very expanded and bursting on another side. And so that works very well against an Arsenal. You know, or putting very high pressure to make a mistake happen, or sort of a short pass, or, you know, to stop the play as high up as possible. The problem is when they come up against people who get around that, it's as if the players aren't coached yet to deal with that. And that's what I think a lot of people find unusual, because it's not like Liverpool went through a hard game against those players, against a Leicester or a Burnley, who they're coming up against next. What they go through is actually very normal football, very sort of things that you'd imagine other teams would deal with quite well. But Klopp doesn't seem to have prepared them for that. And so I think when people talk about mentality, what they're actually talking about is approach, and sort of the way that the team operate when they're out on the pitch. They're not talking about someone being literally or physically weak, although that is sometimes the outcome of that. I think Nick is alluding to something. He says he's looked through the numbers, and I'm going on his podcast tomorrow night to discuss it. I'm not quite sure what he's going to throw at me, because I'm not 100% sure where Liverpool's numbers fall down, but I'm guessing it's somewhere along the lines of poor defensive partnerships, therefore a lot of people being allowed to run at the back line. And then up front, not poor finishing, but sort of not being able to create, you know, almost an expected goals type model kind of thing.
Definitely go and check out Knicks podcast. Lawrence on it this week.
The weekly Rondo or something. The Rondo. Stuff. It's got Napoon on it, sadly, but yeah.
Well, on Sanchez, Dave, dropped for the game, Wenger claiming post-match for tactical reasons. He wanted Giroud in there for that height, for that aerial threat. It then came out afterwards on Sunday evening that perhaps this wasn't the case, that Sanchez had had a furious bust-up in training with his teammates. Wenger, disappointed with his attitude, decided him to drop him to the bench. And then today, in the pre-Champions League press conference, Wenger claiming none of this was true whatsoever. There was no fight, there was no falling out. This is all just a ridiculous mess, isn't it?
It is a bit of a mess. Sanchez has shown some pretty, you know, bad tones to his teammates in recent weeks. You know, the petulance, the tossing of the gloves, the sulking, the negative attitude. Now, I think the same sort of thing happened when he left Barcelona, that he went through a same phase of just looking dead grumpy, falling out with teammates, and then eventually leaving out of the back door, in a way. You know, after serving Barcelona quite well the time he was there, he picked up a La Liga title, but left in pretty interesting circumstances to move to Arsenal. So maybe the same thing has happened again, where Sanchez has seen the hump and he's kicking off. You know, would you like that in training if your teammate just walked off? That's what's been reported, that Sanchez just left the training session, just walked off. You know, if I was there, if I was the captain, or if I was anything to do with that team, I'd be annoyed.
This is the thing,
I'd be the one having a go at him. I'd be kicking off.
But
we don't know, though.
We don't know. I think Wenger was lying today in that Champions League press conference when he said nothing happened. I think it's ridiculous for Arsene Wenger to claim that when we've seen the reports coming out from a number of different sources in a number of different publications. I don't understand why Wenger has come out to claim that. I'm not sure what purpose he thinks it serves. It was strange in the first place, sort of dropping him for the game and sort of going for this sort of halfway house, bringing him on in the second half when he realised, well, actually, we probably need Sanchez. It's not exactly a convincing disciplinary measure when you do sort of go back on it in that way. But at the same time,
but the problem being that you're assuming that he needs to do a disciplinary measure.
Of course, but I mean, I'm only going on what's been reported in numerous national newspaper sources. I mean, what else can we say? Wenger was right. There was no bust-up, even though we've seen, as Sanchez posted on Instagram, a rather interesting post about how the true warrior fights, not because he hates the ones in front of him, but because he loves those behind him. You know, there's all these little hints that I think if you put them all together, based on Sanchez's attitude over the past few weeks, since that draw at Bournemouth, really.
Yeah, but Adam, let apostrophe go, Gunners. Let go.
Exactly.
What he's saying is, let me leave.
What do you make of this, Lawrence? Because
let me apostrophe go.
Part of me thinks most Arsenal fans would probably rather have or keep Sanchez at Arsenal than Arsene Wenger at this point, given how the season's going. People may admire his sort of fighting spirit and say, you know, I wish more Arsenal players were like this. They were less satisfied with mediocrity. They were fighting. They were showing their frustrations, be it on the pitch, be it on the training ground. Others will criticise what is reported to be an unprofessional attitude, something that Arsene Wenger needs to make an example of. Where do you think, based on what we know, the line is drawn?
What we know is there is currently disharmony in the team. We don't know why. We don't know the cause. We don't know where. We think we have an inkling as to where that's coming from. It's either, well, we know that Alexis is part of that. We know that Wenger is also part of that or complicit in some way because he's allowing that to go on. We also know that Wenger tried to sort of play around that. I guess what I have a problem with and why I have a question is, transfer window's over. You're not going anywhere. Why not just stay quiet and wait until the summer? Why make it
Because
hard
he's got the like heart this? Of a lion, Lawrence, and he can't accept this middling season that Arsenal are going through, even though they're only 6 points behind Spurs.
Exactly. And part of the problem, I mean, I guess for him is he considers it middling because he will have been sold on the idea that when he first came to Arsenal, they will win things and they haven't won anything of note. The problem being now, it sort of leaves Arsenal fans in the halfway house. They have a player who doesn't essentially want to play in this team, but doesn't mean he doesn't want to play for Arsenal. Although, in many ways, what Arsenal have become, he doesn't want to play for. And they also have a legend of a manager who, in recent times, what also seems to have been completely swept over here is that Gary Neville said about Arsenal Fan TV They don't seem to have any loyalty to Wenger. They don't seem to have any respect for him. That was briefly discussed. Very little was gotten into, and then it was all forgotten about. And now it seems as if they're allowed to go back to, on Arsenal Fan TV at least, disrespecting Wenger in some way. So nothing seems to be being addressed at the club. And I think that actually what a lot of fans aren't realising is that's allowing the people at the very top, who they keep criticising, to benefit the most. And then that very little happens.
Surely, though Sanchez is off at the end of the season, Wenger potentially off at the end of the season, this is the end for both of them. You can't see them staying behind this.
But I don't see that as a bad thing.
No, I don't either. I think that's potentially a positive. I think it's frustrating once again for Arsenal fans, because if indeed they do finish outside the top four this season, have those Champions League qualifications been significantly dented by this defeat? It remains to be seen, but Sanchez almost represented a change at Arsenal. You know, for all those years of building the stadium and paying that off, they weren't allowed to compete in the transfer market at the level of, say, Manchester United, at the level of, say, Chelsea during those seasons. All of a sudden,
Sanchez is not competing at that level.
But they bring in Mesut Ozil and Sanchez, who are potentially at a different class to players they were signing before, like, say, Marouane Chamakh, for example. But they bring in someone like Alexis Sanchez, who is regarded as a world-class talent, someone who will enable them to compete potentially for the title. And yet here we are again with another disappointing season by Arsenal and Arsenal fans' standards. He could potentially be leaving at the end of this campaign along with Arsene Wenger, with Arsenal outside the top four. Again, there's no progress despite that signing, despite such promise from bringing in someone of the quality of Sanchez.
I think when Wenger leaves, you'll see the progress that club's made. And I think you'll see the basis which Wenger built at that club. And I think the part of a manager's job is to look at a situation dispassionately, to remove, sometimes passionately, but often in Wenger's case, dispassionately, remove any factors which may be impacting his judgment. And sometimes I think some people question Wenger's judgment, but
I think that's part of his job.
And I think the thing you see is as soon as you remove that manager and you have an anti-environment of what that manager was, which is maybe, you know, what went on at Spurs when we saw Sherwood and then Pochettino coming in and doing the opposite, you see the difference. And I think that it's probably a good thing that he will leave at the end of the season. I just don't see what the big fuss is here. I mean, essentially, both teams that took part in this game are currently achieving their level. Liverpool achieving their level. Arsenal achieving their level.
Are Arsenal achieving their level?
Yes. They're look at the rest of the squad compared to others. Look at the players that start. I mean, you still got Withia Walker, and they still
isn't the whole. That's the whole point, isn't it? That they shouldn't be. If that is indeed their level, that they shouldn't be at that level. They should be surpassing that.
Well, I mean, what compared to what? Compared to a Chelsea squad that's, you know, got a brand new manager and a manager with a great amount of experience, spent a lot of money on players. Compared to a Manchester United squad that's still below them anyway, that's again spent a lot of money on players. If your argument is money and being spent on players, that's one side. A Liverpool squad who have spent more than them in recent years, beat them 3-1. A Bayern squad who was cheaper than them, but ultimately has the power of that league. So let's not pretend like it's just spending power.
Maybe, but I mean, Arsenal, maybe they are at the level in that I think Arsenal have got, what, the third or fourth biggest wage bill in the Premier League, you know?
Yeah, and I think that'll be...
Spurs have got something like half their wage bill, and yet... Currently, they're outperforming.
And I think what you will see is when this manager leaves, you'll see a basis for another manager to build. And I think you'll be very grateful at that point as an Arsenal fan.
I agree, but I think as well that can't be an excuse for, you know, what we've said is time and time again, 10 years of stagnation at the club, albeit those initial years, as I say, paying off the stadium. I don't think Arsenal are performing at a level they should be, given their resources in recent seasons, essentially. I don't think they should be going to Liverpool and being defeated in this manner. And I don't think either Arsene Wenger's handled this situation well. The drop in Sanchez for that game, claiming it was a tactical decision, coming out now and saying it's all lies, even though, you know, I think these are very well-sourced journalists that are making these reports. I just don't think it's a sensible way to handle the situation.
Yeah. all those other people wouldn't be reporting it if there wasn't a story in it.
Yeah, there's no smoke without fire, as they say.
Yeah, although some people really bet on that. And I watched a very satisfied editor of The Sun sitting back and just talking bollocks on the Sunday supplement. So, wow. You know, there's sometimes there is smoke without fire, Adam. It's just that sometimes those flames are easily fannable.
Let's talk Manchester United, Dave. The fourth time this season that they've had 20-plus shots without winning in the Premier League, more than any other side. A disappointing day at Old Trafford, expected to win this game against Bournemouth at home, to put pressure on Liverpool, to put pressure on that top four. But once again, only a point at home, Dave. What is going on?
Ooh, stats. Beat the person with a stick with stats. Anyway.
Dangerous defence to go down there.
Dangerous defence, Adam.
Surely, though, Dave, the problem is that if those stats are not good stats, then it's not a good stick.
There we go. Is it a statty stick, Adam, that you're beating me with?
It's a huge club, mate. It's a stat club. No.
Well,
wow. Not a club anymore. I want to
protect the boys and obviously defend the Man United agenda. We'll take Tyrone Mings. Should have been sent off. The same with good old Dan Gosling as well. Should have seen the second yellow card. Should have gone. Should have been sent off. So United should have in fact been playing against 8 men, but they're in fact against 10.
And Dave, would that not have meant they'd have lost 3-1?
Lawrence, hold on. And Paul Pogba can't dictate the play well enough against 10 men, but if it was against 8 men, maybe he wouldn't be playing stupid long balls from inside his, you know, inside the centre circle when it was like 70 minutes gone, when you needed to get the ball
wide and cross it. It's a great point.
Work them from left to right. I think that was why United lost, was the referee once again.
It was all his fault. It's like he should have sent off Mings for that and stamp.
Did you see where Tyrone Mings headbutted Zlatan's elbow? Terrible. It was just, that should be like a 10-game ban.
Just ridiculous. Surely, though, Dave, despite these incidents, some of the blame has to not fall on the referee's shoulders and the team itself, though.
You could do. If you were to look into a little bit more detail, you would have seen Zlatan Ibrahimovic miss 4 chances from inside the penalty area that he had to have scored. The one from Anthony Martial created for him. I don't know how he missed it. He like got his legs tangled up on himself. And Zlatan was misfiring, which means Manchester United are misfiring, and it's becoming a little bit of an issue that other players are missing chances. Paul Pogba again missed 3 golden opportunities, won the 1v1, which he created himself a great run from inside his half. And I think we've got to remember that Paul Pogba played very, very well in that first half. It was just poor in the second half, and it is his age, his maturity as a player. And I mentioned before the joke in switching the ball and so forth, but he wasn't doing that. And the substitutions from Mourinho were very poor. I've lauded Mourinho's good changes this year. He got it completely wrong against Bournemouth. You know, taking off Wayne Rooney, who this season has a moment in him. He has a moment in the game, and he hadn't had that moment yet. And that's all Wayne Rooney has done. He's either scored or assisted, and he always has that one moment. Would have left Wayne Rooney on. In terms of taking off Michael Carrick, pretty silly if you're not going to bring on Ander Herrera. United lacked Ander Herrera's intensity in the centre of the park in terms of his pressing, his ability on the ball and so forth. And then the last change of bringing on Jesse Lingard for Luke Shaw. Luke Shaw had an absolute wonderful game. Luke Shaw was brilliant. Luke Shaw was United's best player at fullback. And, you know, as the game goes on, as the game stretches, you want your fullbacks to cross the ball. That's what Mourinho has done really well when he has changed games with substitutes. He's got it to the fullbacks and then he's crossed. This just was crossing from the wrong places, was like straight balls up to the top, so easy to defend against. But again, Luke Shaw, so good. You're bringing on off a left fullback that can get forward very well for a right-footed attacking midfielder that can't take throw-ins. There's your issue.
We do have to talk, of course, Lawrence, about the mad 5 minutes just before half-time where Tyrone Mings appeared, first off, to stamp on Zlatan Ibrahimovic's head. A lot of debate.
Appeared? Well, appeared, Adam. He stamped on his head.
I've got a doubt in my mind as to whether it was intentional or not.
But if you roll it back, Zlatan stamps on Mings, then Mings stamps on
Zlatan. He did try to give him a little...
Hadouken! A little elbow to the face. It was pretty brutal.
Both as bad as each other, but...
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't look... It's not. It's harder to prove intent from Mings.
That's part of the problem. Is that he sort of looks down, and you could construe it either way. No one knows what's going on in his head, but it looked like maybe he's trying to miss his head, maybe he's trying to stamp on his head.
There is a big issue, though, isn't there, in slowing something down to 240 frames or whatever, and then being like, oh, look at this happening in real time.
Yeah, to try and understand when someone's thoughts are going so much quicker than that is a bizarre process. But the FA have given both of them, they've both been charged with violent conduct. Zlatan's going to be banned for 3 games, by the looks of it. 3 domestic games. They're going for more for Tyrone Mings because it's a stamp, and that's deemed more serious, despite, as you say, the lack of being able to prove the intent.
Lawrence, the rules are the rules.
The rules are the rules. Both red card offences.
So is the offside rule, though, Dave.
Yes, but in a few years, Lawrence, when I'm a technical director at the FA, the offside rule will be going, will be reverted to previous legislation.
Really? What about the stamp on the head rule?
We'll look into that, I think, because getting stamped on the head is pretty brutal, but so is getting elbowed in the face.
So is getting elbowed in there.
Pretty dangerous. The thing is,
I don't think we would be laughing so much or sort of treating this so trivially.
If Tyrone Mings
had gone down to the ground unconscious.
Same with Zlatan Ibrahimovic, though. Same thing.
Yeah, no, but Dave, we do have to understand that it's there again. We know we're very sure of the intent from Zlatan, and we may be sure of the intent from Mings as well. But the difference is that actually, both players were basically essentially tried to give the other player a head injury. I don't think we'd be laughing if either of them say had the reaction that Torres had when he was knocked out. I think a lot of people would be much more traumatized by what was going on, and we'd probably be treating it much more seriously.
I don't think it helps Zlatan even saying the fact that Mings jumped into his elbow. I don't think that helps his case at all. Dave, as I said before, I was delighted to see him miss the penalty, Zlatan. I was delighted to see that he might be getting a ban. Do you think he's going to come back stronger from this? Do you think Manchester United are going to be able to cope without him? Because as you said, they are reliant upon the big Swede.
Yeah, well, the stats that were reeled off last week in terms of what he scored 33% of United's goals in all competitions, been directly involved in 50% of the goals in the Premier League, is a big miss. And it's kind of a Diego Melito-esque player that has left the United team. You know, the Inter Milan team, Mourinho Inter Milan team was all geared to Diego Melito, same with Zlatan. So whether Marcus Rashford can step in, you know, definitely whether Wayne Rooney could play as a number 9, why not? You know, if Henrik Mkhitaryan's back in the team, don't matter who's ahead of him, he'll create chances all day long. So I'm not too worried, to be honest. And I think it might be good for the team to, you know, have another string to their bow in a way to go, okay, right, we can start Marcus Rashford ahead of Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Obviously, this is nothing to do with the bet. In terms of the bet, I want him straight back in the team ASAP. But I did sort of mention earlier on in the season that he will go through another bad patch of form of goal scoring. And that's probably going to be around now, you know, out of the team, struggle to get back with his fitness. And then it's going to be like, I reckon, right, 5 games to go, he'll need to score 5 goals.
And he's going to do it. My hopes aren't up. I'm still expecting to have to bleach my hair, to be honest. But this is a nice little bit of hope, a glimmer.
Dave, I've been asked by a listener, a dedicated, intelligent listener.
Okay.
To ask you, whereabouts in Manchester United are based?
South Manchester, Lawrence.
South Manchester, Dave. Really?
Yes, Lawrence.
And what about a city?
North Manchester, Lawrence.
Interesting. Now, this listener tells me that you're a...
This listener must be... You just said that he was intelligent.
And he says, tell Dave, United are west of Manchester and the city are east, not north and south. He's a...
Same
Mancunian.
Thing.
Mancunian. Yeah.
Same thing.
Just the basics.
What's the difference, north and south, east and west, Lawrence? Come on, get a map out.
I don't know what is going on right now.
Well, Dave, this listener calls you a...
Yeah, we got that the first time, I think.
If we're going to be really precise, right? So if we do got Manchester, it's like it's south west Manchester, and the city ground would be north east Manchester.
Right.
Honestly, if we got a protractor out, or you know, some sort of angle calculator,
or a compass,
right. And if any of those measuring equipment I just mentioned there, we'd find in fact that was the case. So our fellow listener, I'm sorry, but you're wrong.
Are you calling them?
No, you see, I'm a respectable professional.
This one's going to be marked explicit, Adam.
South Manchester, East Manchester, who knows? They're sixth.
West Manchester, it's not hard. You said the two places they weren't.
Yeah. Because who knows, Lawrence? We'll never know in many ways.
You're right. The map can lie.
Tottenham, though, of North London, I think it is. The team in second place in the table as it stands right now. Tottenham Hotspur.
You always have to say as it stands.
A mere 10 points behind.
When's that mentality going to set in?
I don't think they are going to choke, Dave. That was their ninth home win in a row against Everton. A 3-2 win. And despite the scoreline, it was a dominant performance. Spurs were comfortable for 90% of the game. Jan Vertonghen, he had Romelu Lukaku in his pocket, apart from the one time where he made one literal slip up. And Lukaku,
apart from the time that he put him on his ass and put the ball in the back of the net. But yeah, he had a great game.
But apart from that, I thought he handled Lukaku very well. Yes, it was Lukaku shrugging off Super Jan towards the end of the game and rifling it in to Lloris's bottom right-hand corner. But apart from that, I think Spurs looked comfortable. You know, Koeman, I'm not sure whether he set up too negative the first 20 minutes, you know.
Too negative. He played like 3-4 ball-winning midfielders in central midfield.
But for the first 20 minutes, it seemed to work. You know, it seemed to frustrate Tottenham. There was no space between the lines for Kane and Ali to sort of receive the ball. After 20 minutes, the one time Harry Kane did manage to find a gap, fires off a shot straight into the net. And that sort of, you know, opened up the game a little bit. The frustration would be, despite how good Kane was and how prolific he's been in 2017, you know, he should have scored more in that match. He said to himself in the post-match interview, you know, Spurs on the whole had 20 shots. We should have scored more goals. And there is that worry occasionally that Spurs will let their lead slip and let that dominance slip and pay for their profligacy in front of goal. And Spurs almost did in this game, despite the fact that on the whole they were comfortable. Everton almost punished them for not taking their chances earlier in the game. But as I said, 9 home wins in a row. Of the 11 games left, only 3 are against teams in the top 10. Southampton next, who are 10th. Arsenal at White Hart Lane at the end of April. And of course, Manchester United. I'm pretty confident now that we will finish in the top 4. Whether we're going to finish above Arsenal again, I'm more hopeful than expectant. Something just tells me that Arsenal, you know, they're only 6 points behind Spurs with a game in hand, despite this season of apparent turmoil. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. But build as Kane v Lukaku, as you discussed in your podcast today, Dave, who would you rather have in your team?
This was a good one. I did come to the conclusion in the podcast, Adam, so of course people need to click on that before I can tell them the answer. But in terms of both strikers, I love the great variation in their play. And they're stylistically, they're like the polar opposite. You've got Harry Kane, who's more of a, you know, a ball playing forward, and then Lukaku is just your poacher. So clinical. So many goals he's scored this season. He's just in the penalty area alone, 3 yards out, and he'll put it in with a header or a volley. And in terms of goal scoring, they've been excellent in the last 4 seasons. In fact, Kane has scored more goals than Lukaku in that time frame. But if you take out the penalties, Lukaku has scored more than Kane. But again, you've got to look at if Kane's won the penalty and so forth. So they're so similar and they're so close. And obviously the 19 goals Kane has scored this season in the Premier League makes him the top scorer at the moment. But Lukaku in behind with 17 goals. I love the variation. I love that they're both young players and they're both playing their football in the Premier League. But it's not going to be long before, unfortunately, they're both going to move on. Adam, unfortunately, you know, Real
what,
Madrid.
What are you talking about?
They're going to come calling for both of them.
I think Lukaku will be moving on maybe the end of next season. Kane is a lifer, mate. He's a lifer. I can see the likes of, say, Dele Alli moving to one of the European giants. I think Harry Kane's a lifer, mate. The club's in his heart, mate.
I think he's too good, unfortunately.
Too good for Spurs?
I think he's at that level.
Challenging for the title, you know?
I know, but you're just not going to get there, Adam.
Really?
It happens every year.
No, mate, this is...
The last 7 games.
Let's see what happens, mate.
Pochettino just bottles it, mate.
Let's see what happens this season. Let's see what happens. Of course, Lukaku's never scored 20 goals in a Premier League season, Lawrence. So obviously you'd rather have Harry Kane in your team.
Okay.
A convincing argument put forward. Nailed I'm glad it. That you agree
Harry
with
Harry Kane would be so good at Liverpool. It'd be perfect.
Yeah.
Harry Kane, Lukaku would be amazing at Liverpool.
Unfortunately,
actually, you know what?
He
would have been good under Rodgers. Not so much under Plop.
Breathing down Tottenham's neck in the third place are Manchester City, just a point behind Spurs with a game in hand. 2-0 they won at Sunderland. Comfortable performance. Sergio Aguero scoring his fifth goal in three games to give them all 3 points. David Moyes' side rooted to the bottom of the table. Almost certain of relegation now, Lawrence.
Yeah, well, I mean, you will be certain of relegation if you're dour like that. Although, actually, some of them really made it very hard for Man City. What I find unusual was, a week ago, David Moyes said, we have 12 games left, but one of those is against Man City. So, essentially, what he was saying was, we have 11 games left. He then set up his team to completely kill themselves out on the pitch for the cause. And you sort of think, okay, so what are you thinking on this? Are you thinking we are going to lose, therefore we should put in a vast amount of effort and almost waste energy on that? Or is it better to show the fans that in the 12 games we've got left, even though we're going down, we're trying to stay back up, we're trying to stay up, even though it's too late anyway? I don't get the idea. I just don't get it. I don't get how he's motivating this side. Well, the thing is, what's difficult from the outside is, if he'd stay quiet, then you sort of think, well, you know, we don't know. But a week ago in public, he was saying, well, one of those games is against Man City. So even if he's not giving that message to the squad, he's still giving a very disappointing message to the fans and showing that he doesn't think that Sunderland can compete. So overall, it's just a really disappointing message that Sunderland are sending out. And if they'd have won this week, even then he wouldn't have been vindicated. So I understand it. Sometimes he's frustrated. The problem is with this side, they rely way too much on Defoe. And, you know, with City, they had some really great spells of football. I think most people have been impressed with the wingers this week. That's probably because their back line wasn't really didn't do as well as it should have done, to be honest. And I think Sunderland were quite profligate in the way that they wasted a lot. Leroy Sané, by the way.
6 points in Sané Lee Good. Does that work?
Yeah, but I think it's been used before.
6 points clear of safety, though, Sunderland. Calls for David Moyes to get sacked. Surely it's too late now. I know we've seen...
Where's
he going? Yeah. Well, I don't know who you're going to get in at this point. Surely we've seen... I understand the temptation in that we've seen the uplift from Leicester, who made that decision to get rid of Ranieri, which was so controversial. Swansea as well have seen that uplift with a change in manager. But at this point, 11 games left, it's too late, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, they're starting to be cut adrift really in the league, and the performances aren't really warranting a team. You can't, you know, you don't really believe that Sunderland are going to stay up. We see teams that come to sort of this point, they start like kicking on, they start, you know, the players are jaded up. These guys just look done, you know, that we're already relegated. It's like it's already happened, you know, that big chance that Barini missed as well. And it's the calibre of the striker that Sunderland have. Obviously Jermaine Defoe's quality, but everyone else in that side, they're hot and cold. And Barini has always been hot and cold in his Premier League career. You know, the other guy they're going to be looking out for creativity and goals, Yanazai, hot and cold in his career. So there isn't much hope at all for Sunderland, unfortunately.
Is there any hope for Middlesbrough, though? A 2-0 defeat at Stoke without a win in 10 games, and they haven't scored in 4. 3 points adrift of safety calls for Ito Karanka to be sacked.
It's a difficult one with Middlesbrough because they're defensively quite good. They're just going forward. They've been so poor, and they sold the Gary Goals of the Championship, Jordan Rose, to Sheffield Wednesday, who scored 2 goals at the weekend. That could be something they'll look back on and go, I don't, you know, why has it not worked with Jordan Rose? Because he's got a great goal scoring record across every single league he's played in. And it just seems that Karanka hasn't trusted him at all in the Premier League. And Borough, you know, the goal-wise, stats-wise, they scored 19 goals in the Premier League this season. That's five fewer than any other side. So they're just, they've not been good enough. And maybe their defensive structure and defensive shape is restricting them going forward. So they've got to try something. And obviously they could have tried Jordan Rose. Jordan Rose is a better player than Rüdiger Stead, 100%. Rüdiger Stead was so rotten for Aston Villa. So rotten in the Premier League. And I don't know why they've brought him in and let Jordan Rose go. It's an interesting one. Negredo not even coming off the bench against Stoke, so it appears that the confidence has gone in him as well. So, you know, the goals have got to come from somewhere. And I can't find them in this team as well, which is a big, big worry for Middlesbrough.
Manchester United up next at home. And after that, the start of April, a three-game run of Swansea away, Hull away and Burnley at home. Do you think that could be decisive? In
formative times for them, yeah.
They're all 6-pointers, mate. That's 18 points, you know. That could lift them right out of trouble. speaking of Swansea, however, as I said, on the up, back-to-back wins for them, a 3-2 win over Burnley, a hard-fought win, a last-minute goal from Fernando Llorente. Not only is he good-looking, deadly with his head, but this game not without controversy, Lawrence.
Similar to you, Adam.
Thank you. A strange one. There was the push in the back from Fernando Llorente for that winning goal. I think that's undeniable. But sure. Watching Match of the Day, seeing Sean Dyche come out and complain about not getting big decisions in his post-match interview when in that very game, Burnley got a penalty for a handball from their own player. Found that one a little bit strange, a little bit hard to understand from Big Sean.
Well, I mean, maybe he'd been shown one and not the other. You know, I mean, there's not very long after the post-match, so they do sort of go straight off.
Hadn't seen the replays.
But maybe he'd only seen the replay of one, you know. Because Match of the Day probably did, or whoever was interviewing probably did the old, have you seen this? Well, what do you think of that? So essentially it's editing. I mean, it's not like he's going to deny, do you know what I mean? That they got a good decision there. Essentially he's complaining because they didn't get a decision that they were owed, but at the other end, they got another decision. It's not a case of it equals itself out. It's a case of the officiating was wrong on both ends.
Anthony Taylor, of course, referee.
Still have been 2-1.
He'd been on a stag do earlier in the week in Marbella. with none other than Kevin Friend. Some suggestions that maybe that tainted the performance, Lawrence, you know, still feeling the effects.
the insinuation that because you'd been on a stag do almost a week earlier.
3 days, I'll have you know. He got back 3 days earlier, mate.
That's hangover, though, isn't it?
I've had a 3-day hangover from a stag do before.
Jeez. Oh God, I've had some bad hangovers from stag do's.
Yeah, but 3 days.
3 days, mate. Without you haven't done a stag do right if you don't have a 3-day stag hangover. In my
stangover.
Opinion.
I had to go to bed at 8 o'clock after the first evening of one stag do.
that's pretty wild. That is wild. Yeah, what's the
AM?
Pretty insane.
What's your best stag do experience, Dave?
Probably that one, actually. That was a brilliant hangover / still being drunk in Manchester. I'll tell you what, if you ever go to a stag do like a fun game where you've got to go around whichever town or city you're in and like collect certain things. Like get, obviously the best man will probably arrange this, but it just makes it really fun to do like loads of random stuff. But it also makes you go to bed at 8 o'clock in the afternoon or in the early evening.
Collecting what?
Well, everything. Like, you had to take pictures with certain people. Like, you had to take women. Pictures at the hacienda. We had to drink out of a boot, which we took to the cricket. Classic. And drank out the boot at the cricket. And I think that's probably why I went to bed at 8 o'clock.
It was
great fun. Great fun.
Difficult to drink out of the boot.
A leather boot.
Lawrence, what's your best stag do experience?
Just had a really good sort of, light buzz and then bed by 12. It was lovely. Really
nice and relaxed.
Just a very sort of tame night. We all felt better the day after.
Bloody hell.
It was a good time. And actually, the brunch was beautiful.
Ooh,
it was a lovely
culture.
Service.
That's a cultured stag do. Lovely.
Really nice.
No
really,
3-day
really
hangover there.
Well, I mean, it was essentially just 3 days of beautiful rest in a retreat. So relaxing. In many ways, it was just a hangover of life, Adam.
Sounds delightful. My best stag do experience was a superhero costume themed fancy dress stag do, which ended at 2 a.m. with the Hulk fighting Spider-Man in central Amsterdam. That was pretty unforgettable.
Did Hulk smash?
Hulk tried to smash. He did indeed. But wow. Captain America jumped in. He split it up. You know, Batman got in there as well.
You are a bit like a sort of a doughy Captain America, aren't you?
Doughy, mate. I'm got rock solid abs, mate. Let me tell you.
No, I mean, Captain America, I didn't sort of mean you were doughy. I just sort of meant Captain America's absolutely ripped and therefore course, whoever.
This is like that time you said Mario Götze wasn't fat, wasn't it?
Sure,
Lawrence,
mate.
You've got a problem with fat people, you are.
Yeah.
Lawrence, this has gone too far. I think we're going to have a word off the podcast.
You're fattest, mate. You've got a problem with people who got a little
bit.
Mate,
I don't think I'm the fattest.
Lawrence.
Let's quickly round up the rest of the Premier League action.
Palace. Don't round anything up. If anything, you need to slim it down, all right?
terrible
people
human,
like you, make me feel sick, mate.
Palace are out of the bottom three, guys. They've escaped from danger. 2-0 win over West Brom away from home. Back-to-back wins now. Back-to-back clean sheets. With Mamadou Sakho at the back, Lawrence, this is the Big Sam we all know and like, you know? He's back.
And like. We passionately like you. It could completely agree. A bit of a weird performance, really. Unusual. Dave said that they'd turn it around by, end of February? Early March now? Dave's about right. I mean, Big Sam said himself as well.
Mystic Dave strikes again, eh?
I mean, to be fair, it was the same prediction that Big Sam made. But yeah.
Big Sam are boys, Lawrence, that's why.
Boys or men, Dave?
Boys. Sam was on the stag do, actually, in Manchester. He went nuts. Got really pissed.
Was he?
He gets secretly recorded it. Was that when he was drinking that pint of wine?
It
also sort of ended a nice run of games for West Brom, who've been on... quite a nice run after the Tottenham loss. I think that was about five or six games ago now. Essentially, Crystal Palace broke something up that West Brom were on. Whereas if you look the other way, Crystal Palace were on somewhat of a disappointing run of games. And beating Middlesbrough counts as a disappointing run, all right? Next up, they play Watford, and then they play Southampton, and then they play Arsenal, and then they play Leicester, and then they play Liverpool. I think they'll get 9 points from that run.
A good prediction, a bold prediction, and I like it.
Mystic Lawrence.
Dave, I'm
only saying, that's not a bad prediction.
Dave, not only about Sakho, who again impressed in the heart of defence for Crystal Palace, Wilfried Zaha with a fantastic opening goal. He's now been directly involved in more goals this season than his last three Premier League seasons combined. He's got 5 goals and 6 assists. Of course, after this game, fueling talk of a move to Spurs once again. But could he be the key to keeping Palace up?
I think he's slowly starting to mature. It's taken him a while, but eventually these sort of creative types will have whatever happens at training or that something will click with them. And I think that's what's happened with Wilfried Zaha this season, especially. It sort of started the end back end of last season, and as you mentioned, he's been directly involved in 34% of Palace's goals, so he's a key component. And I thought that maybe Big Sam may restrict him a little bit, get him to do too much defensive work, but it's kind of Sam's half freeing him, half drilling him down to his responsibility. So I think it's working well for Sam Allardyce and obviously Wilfried Zaha. If I were Spurs would I take him at Spurs after the end of this season? Probably not. I think you've got to give him another year of playing consistent football. I don't think he'd be good enough to be at Spurs and make that impact off the bench over and over again that they've always required. I don't think he's good enough to get into their starting 11, so I wouldn't sign him.
I'd like him as an option. I would like him as an option. I think when you see against Everton, Moussa Dissoko come off the bench, you can't help but think, maybe someone like Wilfried Zaha, a bit of that pace, a bit of that injection of something a little bit unpredictable would make a difference off the bench, just as an option in the squad.
Beating the fullback 5 times and beating himself once and losing the ball and going out for a throw-in, mate. You want Sissoko's power down that flank.
Yes, it has worked well for Spurs so far this season. Very decisive. Also at the bottom of the table, we'll talk about Leicester. Once again, a victory for Craig Shakespeare, a 3-1 win over Hull City. Leicester have now scored twice as many Premier League goals in their last 2 games under Shakespeare as they did in their last 10 matches under Claudio Ranieri. What's changed, Lawrence? What's going on here?
Well, it's completely the mentality, Adam. It's mentality.
Lovely.
Mentality. No, it's basically now, apparently, according to Danny Drinkwater, down to a simplification of tactics, which seems like an almost classic.
They couldn't handle it before. They couldn't handle it before under Ranieri. Some people
talk about the tinkerman, and how sometimes that confuses players. I think we're seeing a similar situation here where Ranieri was giving or confusing players. I'm not sure they were over complex or particularly problematic in that sense. I imagine that certain players could enact those, but at this point in the season, I think certain people were panicking, and there was a mentality of sorts which stopped players from doing exactly what Ranieri wanted.
You do so hear it over and over again. Back to basics, you know?
I don't even think it's back to basics. I don't think it's basic what they do. I do, although it seems very obvious, I do also think that it's basically that they needed to work out what their game plan was more specifically than actually having a number of different actions to do out on the pitch. I don't think it's basics.
If you, the Statman Day Football podcast, last Wednesday, in fact, I went into it in greater detail. We were talking basically about how Leicester City in his last five games, Ranieri switched his system every single game. And he went from like a 3-5-2 to a diamond with Okazaki in the middle. And I can kind of see what some of these players are saying. If it was just those last six games where they thought, right, he's not got this anymore. I could kind of understand why they'd want him to move on and whatever, and why they are getting, you know, they are on a better run of form, but they owed him a little bit more. They owed him a little bit more time on the training field and so forth. But it is quite interesting that he did try a few too many tricks in the book before his dismissal.
It's quite remarkable to see that change in performance. I mean, Mahrez with his first goal since November in this game, his first from open play since April 2016. I mean, with this upturn in performance, Dave, could they really do it? Could they beat Sevilla in that second leg, being 2-1 down at the moment?
I think it's one of the most interesting ties. I think the Real Madrid game is going to be really good because Napoli, obviously, as you mentioned, Adam, on the game of two halves, that they've got the best front three in world football. Great podcast.
Great podcast.
But I think this is going to be the one that's going to be very, very open. That goal that Leicester scored, it was so crucial, and sort of the luck that they got, they, you know, Sevilla hit the bar, they hit the post, Schmeichel was in an inspired form. This Sevilla team is better than this Leicester City team. They tore them apart, but they didn't score enough goals at home, and they conceded that away goal. If Leicester City nicked a goal then sat deep, what they've done for time and time again, they could undo this Sevilla team, like they undid Liverpool, like they undid Manchester City. One goal is all that it takes, and Leicester City could go through to the next round. And it's that big. They score the first goal, they're in. They let Sevilla start to dictate the play and they don't pressurise them in the right areas, they'll lose the game. But I kind of think this is the one where we might see a reverse of what we actually expect, because Sevilla are playing so well this year in the league and in the Champions League.
We've got a week until that game does kick off, so it'll be interesting to see if indeed Leicester can carry their resurgent league form into the Champions League. Finally, in the Premier League this weekend, Watford 3, Southampton 4. Fantastic game. Nathan Redmond, the star with two goals, fueling talk of an England call-up for his performance. Gabby Adini as well.
And a move to Spurs, Adam.
Yeah, and a move to Spurs. Gabby Adini continues red-hot form. Bit of a freebie from Aurelio Gomez as well. 4-3 ended to the wayside anyway, for Southampton now up to 10th in the table, putting behind them that EFL defeat to Manchester United last weekend. Let's move on to talk the opening week of MLS. With the one and only Chris Henich out in the United States.
Major League. Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Chris, how you doing out there in the United States? How's it going?
I'm not bad. How are you?
Decent, mate. Enjoying your time out there?
Yes. Just landed today, so it's only just begun.
Did you manage to catch some of the first week of MLS action?
I did. I was fortunate enough to catch it last night as I had an early flight out, so I just powered through and stayed up on the Sunday night. So yeah, it was a good first round, all told.
Some interesting headlines. First up, New York Red Bulls spoiling expansion side Atlanta United's debut, but still, despite the 2-1 defeat, Tata Martino's side impressing, Chris.
Yes, I thought they were a little bit unlucky to lose. I think they'll maybe look back at that game and point to chances like Miguel Almiron being 1-1 and things like that as really key turning points, because I think for good portions of the game, the Red Bulls were kind of out of it. Now, in fairness to them, they had a CONCACAF Champions League game to attend to in Vancouver, so there was a lot of travelling for those legs to do last week. But yeah, I thought in terms of an opening performance, a sort of standard setter, if you will, I thought it was really impressive from Atlanta. They were quick. They were actually quite cohesive for a team that was still in its infancy. But also the players that they kind of bought on big money, like Jose Martinez, Almiron, I thought they showed real glimmers of quality. And I'll be amazed if they don't play some really scintillating stuff that has end product during it this season.
I'm excited to see how they develop. I'm heading out to see, I believe it's going to be their third game against Chicago Fire, I think they're playing. And as you said, the crowd, it was a sellout, wasn't it, in that first game at home. To get 55,000 people there, to see some of the atmosphere they were generating for an expansion side is impressive.
It really is, yeah. I think, look, there were some slightly unsavoury elements. There was a couple of beers thrown at players. There was a chant that was slightly homophobic, circulating every time the goalkeeper took a goal kick. But, I mean, I only say that because it can be interpreted in a number of different ways, as is the case with words, but I'm inclined to believe that it's only really got one meaning. But apart from that, yeah, I thought it was a fantastic turnout. I thought actually it was a direct consequence of a team that has been very diligent in the way it's put itself together. I think you can talk about signing big names and you know, getting real big stars to put bums on seats, but I think honestly, if you construct your team in a way that suggests you have sporting integrity, I think you'll get fans hand over fist. And I think that's what happened in Atlanta. They saw a project that wasn't just trying to ride off the back of a wave. It was something that genuinely wanted to not just compete, but I also think leave a mark in American soccer.
A promising debut then for Atlanta. Less so potentially for the other expansion side, Minnesota United. They set an unwanted record during their first game at the weekend, Chris.
Yeah, they lost 5-1 to Portland, which, I mean, it's difficult because Portland had quite a disappointing season last year, and I think they're looking to bounce back massively in 2017. So, not the ideal opposition. And you know, the funny thing is, it was kind of a close game for the most part. It was only sort of the last portion where things really started to get away from them. And I think you saw a similarity with Minnesota and Atlanta in that sense, that after the 75-minute mark, they both looked pretty gassed. But it would be unfair, I think, to single out individuals who made mistakes for Minnesota, because, again, it's a collective that goes up or down. The one thing that I think is a silver lining for them is the fact Christian Ramirez, who was their kind of star man in NASL, already has his first MLS goal, and it was a really well-taken one. There was a lot of questions about him and whether he could step up to this level and whether he could handle it. If Friday night is anything to go by, then I think he'll have a fantastic career in MLS, because he does seem like a very talented centre forward. So there's a lot for them still to do. There's some players that I think haven't been able to show what they can do yet. And of course it's that minute sample size of one game. So you don't want to draw any massive conclusions yet, but I think both will agree they've got work to do.
Another man taking the headlines, Clint Dempsey, who returned, having not played in a competitive game since August after being diagnosed with an irregular heartbeat. He returned for Seattle, played for the full game, and pulled one back in a 2-1 defeat to Houston, Chris.
He did. It was a good finish by him. I think I've got a slight concern with Seattle this season, though, because, again, there was a lot of that playoff run that felt like it was the perfect storm. It was very much momentum, I think, that carried them through it in parts. And I just don't know if they've got the same balance this time around. They let Tyrone Mears go to Atlanta in the off-season. They've got a DP spot still open that there was talk they were going to use on Kosuke Honda, the AC Milan and former CSKA Moscow midfielder. But I just feel like maybe there just needs to be a little bit more pace in there. At the minute, you're looking for Jordan Morris or Jovin Jones to really stretch the opposition. Now, when you consider Jones as a left-back, and Morris, I think, is someone that is still developing himself, it would be better if they had just a different option. But again, if there's one thing I'm confident of, it's that the group at that club are very intelligent and very diligent. So whoever they do opt to spend the money on. I think it'll be a good deal. I think they'll have learned a lot from the Nelson Valdez deal.
We also saw Orlando City edging out New York City FC, a 1-0 win, despite two of their bigger players going off injured.
Yeah, I mean, Kaká is always going to be a miss, but I actually think in Giles Barnes, they've got someone that could be a perfect foil for Kyle Larin across the season, because if there's one thing I've noticed about Giles, it's that he does like to come a little bit deeper and move around a target forward. He's got a lot of intelligence, and I just think that even though it didn't work out for him in England, it has worked for the most part in MLS. Now, Larin, his strike partner, I think he's destined for Europe. I'm very cautious when I say that about an MLS player, because I think sometimes it's easy to get trapped in that bubble of seeing someone thrive in this league and saying, well, you know, they must be able to transfer to Europe easily. I just think he's got so much in his locker, and he's still so young as well. That's the thing. There's a few players like that, though, and I'm sure we will do it, come on to that in videos and topics and things during the course of this year. But it's a real difficult one for Orlando in that sense, because I look at that team and a lot of it is invested in Larin and Kaká. And if, and we know Kaká's out for 6 weeks, it looks like, if injuries sort of plague them this season, I just fear they'll have another disappointing year. And when you consider the NYCFC, the expansion side that joined them that same year, were able to make the playoffs last year, I would argue on the surface of things are a good bet to make it this year. You've got to think Orlando does it this time around.
Finally, I mean, overall, we've heard a lot of talk of improved quality in MLS, with some observing a significant addition of talent during the off-season. Did we see evidence of that in this opening weekend overall?
Yeah, I think you saw flashes of stuff. I think, you know, guys like Almiron, Martinez, they were fairly good. I think Alexander Ring of New York City FC caught my eyes as someone that gives them something a bit different in midfield. The difficulty is there are a lot of nuances to Major League Soccer. Some of those are travel related, obviously. Others are the fact that the games can be a bit more open. There's maybe not as much tactical structure to things, and that can be difficult. I watched someone like Albert Rusnak for Real Salt Lake, and I didn't think he had the greatest weekend personally from what I saw. And I think, look, what you're seeing overall is a genuine shift towards younger players. The idea of, and we touched on this when we started discussing MLS here, the idea of signing a player that is very well established, is a known name, is not as appealing as it once was, because the truth is, in a lot of cases, you have to carry that player as a team. And I think increasingly, the desire to win things and be successful is far trumping having the ability to sell shirts. I think clubs are realising, for the most part, that there's better talent within their regions, in Argentina, places like that. In fact, the New York Times just did a good piece on that. And I think what that's leading clubs into believing, and rightly so, is that if we win stuff, then people will want to buy the shirts anyway. Whereas if we try and sell them the shirt before we sold them the success, it's just not going to work.
Let's go to Europe, guys, and round up the action from the top European leagues.
Not literally.
Should we start in Italy, Lawrence?
Oh, do you want to?
Yeah, I would like to.
Udinese 1, Juventus 1. We saw a big gap going into the weekend, and Juventus have been pegged back after a draw with Udinese, who, despite dominance and possession from Juventus and them showering and peppering Udinese with corners, they didn't get as many shots as Udinese, and I think Udinese made the best of the game. I watched about an hour's highlights worth of this match, and simply put, it was just that Udinese made more of their chances than Juventus did, and ultimately it was a cross from the right which saved the point for Juventus in the 60th minute, and then they just weren't able to push on from there and get more. Again, lovely performance from Juventus, and you know they controlled so much of it. They strangled a lot of Udinese, but in the end, Udinese did manage to play around a lot of what I think most people have considered the very controlling Juventus side of the season. Still, they're 8 points ahead of the nearest chasing pack, who are, of course, Roma and Napoli. Roma losing 2-1 at home to Napoli, who played beautifully around around Roma. And part of it was the highlight of this game. Did anyone else see the dog wee?
No, the dog wee.
Yes.
You didn't see Mertens?
In reference to Dries Mertens' celebration, I think.
You didn't see Dries Mertens sort of beautifully lift the ball over on rushing Chesney and just, for some reason, go over to the corner flag and pee like a dog?
I can't claim to know why he did it. The only crumb of insight I had on this game was that La Gazzetta dello Sport called it the Battle of the Mohicans because you had an eye goal in against Hamzik.
Good. Not that Nianglan managed to influence the game as much as he could have. Ultimately, Napoli coming away with a 2-1 win. I also read that Dries Mertens called Naples the most beautiful place in the world. And I'm going to go there very soon, so I'll tell you whether it is.
Well, you can confirm.
Or deny it.
His assertion. Or deny.
Yeah. By the way, Pepe Reina is having quite the run of form at the moment. And whilst he did concede a goal against Roma, he's made some really key saves in trying to keep Napoli in this title fight. So whilst Liverpool still seems to be struggling, more reports that every goalkeeper who's left Liverpool has since gone on to do great things. And then, of course, Milan won 3-1 against Chievo. Done.
Boom. Let's leave Italy and beautiful Naples. Should we go to Germany, Dave?
Why not? Not literally.
Yeah, because Gert Hart goals this weekend was scoring all the goals. In fact, the Bundesliga this weekend had more goals than any other league in Europe. In terms of the big ones, Dortmund beat Bayer Leverkusen 6-2, an absolute cracker. Roger Schmidt's last game in charge. In fact, he was sacked the day after the defeat in Dortmund. Aubameyang grabbing a brace, Pulisic grabbing a goal, Schürrle from the penalty spot, Guerrero rounding off the scoring, and Ousmane Dembele starting the rout. But the Bundesliga started on Friday night. Leipzig went to Augsburg. A really, really good game of football. Really interesting, a tactical game, a 5-4-1 up against Leipzig's 4-3-3 that they've switched to in recent weeks after Jonas Poulsen's injury. It was a really good game. Naby Keita was so good in that first half. He's going to be one of the best players in the world. He just has it all. He has everything a midfielder can do. He can tackle like Kante. He's got great ball control. His ability to find a forward pass is fantastic. But he plays a lot of high percentage passes, but he finds them. The assist for the first goal was brilliant. But unfortunately, Leipzig drawing 2-2 with Augsburg. Augsburg scored some pretty... Both of their goals were good. The first one was a strike from outside the area, and the second was a fantastic counter-attack, which unfortunately leaves them now, in fact, 7 points behind Bayern Munich, who beat Cologne on Saturday afternoon. In fact, Bayern Munich were the first team to win in Cologne in 11 months. Orchestrated all by Thiago playing a little bit deeper in midfield. Wan-Bernat got forward quite well. Thomas Müller picked up his ninth assist of the season. Only Forsberg has registered more in the Bundesliga this year. In elsewhere, Hoffenheim won 5-2. Werder Bremen beat Darmstadt in the clash for a sort of relegation battle, 2-0. We had on Sunday, we had Borussia Mönchengladbach beating Schalke 4-2 as well. Another quality game in the Bundesliga. And that's why you want to go over there and check out some of those games. Hamburg as well, resurgent, beating Hertha Berlin. Hertha Berlin had a fantastic start to the season, but have dropped off and now are in fifth position. Hamburg battling relegation now, level on points with Wolfsburg, who in fact were doing very, very well with De Bruyne and so forth a few seasons ago. But they seem to have gone in a really sticky patch of form. And that is about that for the Bundesliga, Adam.
Let's say our feed is aimed to the Bundesliga. Hola to La Liga. Interesting.
See how very good.
An interesting weekend. Barcelona warming up for their Champions League second leg against PSG, where they need 5 goals and a clean sheet at home by scoring 5 goals and getting a clean sheet at home, albeit against Celta Vigo, who are slap bang in the middle of the table. Lionel Messi, though, in sparkling form right now. 2 sensational trademark solo goals, curling in one from the edge of the area, wrong foot in the goalkeeper with the other. 2 assists as well, one for a delightful, disgusting Neymar chip, the other for Samuel Umtiti to poke home. Even Rakitic completing the route to send Barca 1 point clear at the top of the table, albeit second place Madrid having a game in hand yet to play. Sevilla's title hopes, meanwhile, were dented with a 1-0 draw at Alaves. They remain third, 4 points off the top, while rounding out the top 4 are Atletico Madrid, moved back into those Champions League places with a comfortable 3-0 win over Valencia, 2 for Griezmann, 1 for Gamero. But everyone just happy to see Fernando Torres back at the Vicente Calderon, the Spaniard watching from the stands 2 days after being released from hospital following that nasty head injury he suffered in their last game. So good to see Torres back to full health, and hopefully we'll see him back on the pitch soon. Player of the week. We asked for your suggestions on Twitter and you did not disappoint. Lots of shouts coming in, so thank you for sending those in. Do follow us on Twitter at The Front Three and get your suggestions in every Monday. The results this week: in fourth place, Fernando Llorente with 16% of the votes. In third place, Kylian Mbappe with 17%. The youngest ever player in Ligue 1 history, I believe, to reach 10 goals in a season. Second place is Lionel Messi, 2 goals and 2 assists for the Barcelona star. But in first place for that hat-trick for Torino, it is Andrea Belotti. Andrea, Boxer Ferreira Rocher, sitting right here with your name on them. Congratulations for winning the prestigious honour of the TF3 Player of the Week. Before we go this week, we have to talk about Russia, Lawrence.
Do we?
Yeah, there's been an interesting development in in Russia ahead of that 2018 World Cup. The nationalist MP Igor Lebedev has proposed legalized fighting of hooligans.
Oh, it's such a... Yeah.
I mean, what do you make of this? This could be the next big spectator sport, no?
I mean, it's similar to UFC, but it's just not. This is the same guy who, when he went to visit the Euros, said to the Russians, "Well done, lads." It's just worrying, because essentially what he's doing is he's normalizing fighting step by step to try to make it into something which other people in Europe somehow have to accept. I don't know why, because I don't fucking know.
What he's trying to do
is make something crazy out of it. And what he's suggesting is let's legalize certain kinds of fights between fans, because certain fans want to fight. And essentially what he's trying to do is instill a sense of national pride in the Russians.
But it's
bullshit.
Yeah. He's drawing up rules for draka, the Russian word for fight, of course, which he proposes would involve 20 unarmed competitors on each side in an organized brawl. I think what's so crazy about it is that he sees this as a pioneering move, you know?
Well, I mean, to some extent, it is pioneering, but the problem is that many things are pioneering. The pizza pocket was pioneering, you know what I mean?
Yeah, was it good?
Now there's millions of people who hate themselves. You know, there are lots of things that are pioneering, but there's no bloody need to do them. You know, Snapchat's pioneering, but it'll die soon because of Instagram.
It's worth 4 billion, mate. I think it's fine.
Yeah, I know, but that's kind of, and in many ways, that is kind of the point, is that actually what he's hiding behind is the politics of Europe in order to get to what he wants.
It should be pointed out, you know, dominance. It should be pointed out he's representing the opposition party. He is on the board of the Russian Football Union, however, but in the published proposal, he said, "Russia would be a pioneer in a new world sport. Fans arrive, for example, and start picking fights, and they get the answer. Challenge accepted. A meeting in a stadium at a set time." Very strange.
I mean, to be fair, it sounds very tempting for an England lout, but I think
such as yourself.
What I'm also wondering though is how does logistically that even work? I mean, you get your head absolutely caved in by a Russian. What happens then? Are you taken to hospital for free? Like,
I just get the feeling it's not going to happen. And I think that would be good for everyone involved.
I guess so. It's just, let's not legitimize it by giving it any reasonable reaction.
Yeah, let's not legitimize violence. You know, who do you think would win in a fight out of us four? Just before we go,
someone tweeted this out earlier in the week, didn't they?
Did they? What? Who would win in a fight between the four of us?
I think someone said something like that, wasn't it?
I think, you know, Dave's got a bit of that sort of northern roughness about him. I think, you know, he'd fight dirty for one.
He's not scrappy enough.
Yeah, I think he Chris is scrappy. I think Chris would be tough to handle, actually. I think he's got a swing on him. And I think, you know, Lawrence, you'd go down pretty easy. I think you'd be...
Lawrence would be the first one out the bout.
It's funny. That's great. That's great. That's great talk from a little bitch.
I'd use my doughy fists, mate.
Yeah.
That'd be comfortable.
Do some punishment.
That's a really good point, actually, Adam. To be fair, I mean,
that's
your
the thing,
doughy
the doughy, they'd
be
soft. They'd be like pillows,
punch, yeah.
You know. I'd be swinging at you. I just wouldn't do any damage.
And I'd just be sitting there taking it like, oh, that's a great massage. Thanks.
I think I could confidently... I don't think I'd win in a fight against many people. So, you know, I'm confident to say that Dave or Chris, you know, even though I've got the height and the reach advantage, you know, which is significant, I still think, you know, maybe Dave, maybe Chris, I concede, you know.
You lack technique in the arena, I reckon, Adam. That's your problem.
but if I was with 20 other men, if I was with 20 other unarmed competitors, I'd let them do all the fighting, you know. I'd fade to the background.
You'd be having a lifetime dream fulfilled, would you not?
Yeah. Adam, I'm not saying it's likely to happen, but if I was to attack you now, would you beat me up?
Anything to survive.
Yeah.
On that note, I think that's the perfect place to end the podcast this week. Guys, thank you so much for listening. Until Thursday, when we'll be back with the Q&A, as always, Lawrence McKenna, where can the good people, where can the whole find
Cash me outside, how
you?
About that?
Cash me outside. I'm not familiar with this meme. Is this a meme that's been doing the rounds?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Cash me outside. Dave, would you like to cash something outside? Is that how it works?
Yes. What are we cashing?
The Statman Dave podcast? You want to plug
that? Oh, yeah. Anyone wants to send any donations, send them over.
Have you got any?
Snapman Dave Football Podcast.
Have you got any change
Monday
for the letterbox?
Friday. No change in the letterbox. I've been waiting a while, actually.
Spend about 20... Dave a coffee.
Oh, yes, yeah, you can. That's
buy
a
me
thing,
a coffee,
isn't it?
Send me some cash. Maybe a grand would be great.
It's not desperate.
I took it from, let's do something normal to send me some cash.
Yeah, just in a bag. Leave it outside my house. That'd be fucking scary, wouldn't it?
I'd be delighted. Chris, would you like to plug anything this week before Thursday that the people can go and find more of your delightful wordings and musings?
I've written something on Sunderland struggles. I will be writing something on Manolo Gabbiadini as well, and potentially Leroy Sané.
Wow. In Sané. Let's just rinse that as much as we can. Guys, you can find me on Twitter, at Adam Bolwood. If you go there, you'll find a delightful GIF, which has been completely rinsed over the weekend. I think I've used it 4 times so far.
I think I've used it as well.
Yeah, it's just got so many uses, you know. Harry Kane scores, bam. Zlatan misses a penalty, bam. He gets banned. It just never ends. It's the gift that keeps on giving in many ways.
Keeps on gifting in many ways.
Beautiful. Guys, thanks so much for listening. We will see you on Thursday. Until then, have a great week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.